Thank you for listening to this podcast from International Living Radio. For 30 years, International Living has been showing people how they can live happier, healthier lives in some of the most beautiful places on earth for a fraction of what they pay at home. InternationalLiving.com, your source for living the good life for less overseas.
Hi, I'm Dan Prescher. When Winston Churchill left the U.S. for Huatulco, Mexico, it wasn't with the intention of starting an entirely new career. After all, Winton had already gone through what most people would consider a lifetime's worth of careers in the California high-tech arena. But a sudden shift to a warm, laid-back tropical paradise only gave Winton yet another idea for earning a living, one that works from anywhere on earth, and one that he's now teaching to other people. Not surprisingly, it has its roots in high tech, and we'll learn what it is and how Winston Churchill incorporated it into his overseas experience in this week's Finding Your Overseas Paradise from International Living. Winston, thanks for joining me on the show today. It's a pleasure talking to you, and I'm talking to you in Huatulco, Mexico right now, right?
Yes, Dan, it's great to be here. Thanks for calling. And yes, it's a beautiful day in Huatulco today.
I guess it's always a beautiful day in Huatulco, isn't it?
Well, it is. From November through the first few weeks of April, the weather is absolutely perfect. It's a little hotter than some people might like in the summertime and the rainy season. But this time of year, it's surprisingly dry and surprisingly temperate, so it's very nice.
It sounds wonderful, and I know the weather is one of the reasons you chose that location, but first, I think we should probably handle the topic of your name, Winston Churchill.
Oh my goodness, okay.
I know that that's not just a fluke of fate. What's behind the name?
Well, there is a little bit of a fluke. Is I'm a junior, so my father got the name in 1924. He was named after a car called the Winton Six, which was the first motorized vehicles across the United States, and his father was kind of a car nut. And of course, Winston was alive then, but he wasn't famous in the United States, so it was just kind of coincidental. And then I never thought that I was related or the family was related until I got an email about 4 years ago now, I guess. And it was this outfit that said they were doing a research project into Winston Churchill's family line, and they were using DNA, and would I be willing to take a DNA test? And I said, first of all, I looked for the part where I have to send money to Nigeria in order to get the test, but after I figured out they were legit, they sent me a DNA test, and I sent in the results, and they said I was a match to their reference sample, so that I was in fact related. And
amazing.
That was, you know, after at the time probably 54-55 years, I've learned that I was related to the big guy. So
how much did that have to do with your actually writing a book about Winston Churchill? You're a published author, you've published several books, and one
of them, I believe,
deals with Winston Churchill.
Yes, it does, and it had everything to do with it, because what happened when I, you know, as a kid, I always kind of resisted the comparison, and never was really interested in Winston Churchill as a historical figure for the most part. I mean, I had the same amount of stuff about him that everybody else did in high school, probably, and that kind of thing. But then when I found out I was related, it was more like reading about family, and I read a bunch of his work. I mean, as he'd written very extensively about college, about his early career, what he wanted to do, and sort of the strategies he used early in his career. And then in his later years, he came back and revisited those strategies and kind of went through which ones worked out and which ones didn't. At the time, I was focused on college students, and both my kids were in college and that kind of thing. And I thought, boy, what a great opportunity to take some of his famous quotes that had relevance to what kind of life decisions you make when you're at college age and going into the future. So that's what we did, is we took, I think it's 26 of his quotes, and then applied those quote, did a one page how that's relevant to a college kid.
And, some expansion on it, yeah.
Yeah, so and it's, you know, it's a very easy read. I mean, you could read the thing in 20 minutes. It's almost like a, I don't know what I want to say, a meditation book or an affirmation book. And there's just a bunch of real insightful quotes for college people or anybody at the beginning of a career or a project or something like that. So that's how that book came about.
Well, this plays well into your career background, because I know that you're a California guy, but you
yes.
have worked for an incredible list of people before you ever decided to move offshore. What was your work history background like before you actually decided to take it on the road?
Well, I'll try to shorten about 30 years of history into a minute or two, but I went to work. I'd worked for a number of technology companies back in the late 70s, starting about the mid-70s, actually, and then the early 80s, and then in the early 80s went to work for this fledgling new company called Apple Computer. And you know, worked there a number of years, and then went on to work for different companies like Sun Microsystems and Oracle Corporation over the years. And then I was also the VP of Sales and Marketing at Contact Software. It's a company that makes the ACT program that a lot of salespeople and marketing people use to manage their contacts and that sort of thing. So, you know, pretty much a technology career, and of course had the benefit of being kind of clued into what technology can do. And that's pretty much most of my career, was helping people one way or another figure out how to take technology, whatever was available at the time, and use it to make money in their business. And of course that was pretty difficult back in the day, and a whole lot easier now.
Things have really changed. And we're,
yes.
just for our listeners' edification, we are talking on Skype. This is a completely voice over internet protocol interview from Huatulco in Mexico to Cotacachi in Ecuador, where I'm talking to you from right now. So incredible changes in the last 10 years that have made a lot of things possible for people who may want to work anywhere they are on the globe. And this kind of plays into the next topic that I want to talk to you about. You decided to move outside the United States. Of course, you chose Huatulco. Let's just digress a little bit. When people ask you, aren't you afraid to live in Mexico, as I'm sure they inevitably do.
Oh, yes.
What do you tell them? Because you live in Huatulco full time now, is that right?
Right. Well, first of all, I tell them that let's see, I've lived in here in Huatulco for 4 years now, since 2007, and I've spent a fair amount of time in San Miguel de Allende, mm-hmm. and I've never heard a gunshot and never seen a severed head. So, you know, it is interesting. I mean, certainly there are some challenges at the border, but all the statistics, if you go back to the statistics and look at the violent crimes per capita, you know, you're probably twice as safe in Mexico, just about any place, than you are in the United States.
Right.
And particularly when you get into the large cities and the crime-ridden area. And I mean, I used to live in Los Angeles, and I love Los Angeles, but I mean, there were mornings, you know, you get up on Monday morning and they said, you know, 23 people were killed in gang violence over the weekend.
Right.
And that's just one city. And there's, you know, there's a lot of other cities in the United States. So it's, you know, you really have to look at the statistics to understand what's going on. I don't know anybody that's been touched by violence or has even experienced it in any way down here. You know, I live in a town of about 20,000 people, and it's kind of like a town in the Midwest of about 20,000 people. You know, I mean, if you have a problem and get pulled over on the, you know, a car problem, there's uh-huh. there's somebody who's going to come along and help people, help you out of the store with groceries and stuff. Like, I mean, it's just a very friendly place.
And very helpful. Is that one of the specific reasons that you chose Huatulco? What was the process behind deciding on that particular location?
Well, the process was, my wife at the time had been down here with a friend vacationing in Mexico and just saw the place and fell in love with it and put a deposit down sight unseen on a you know, on a piece of unimproved land. And, you know, I got one of those guess what honey calls, and it was, you know, and it was a bad connection, not like a Skype connection. She said, I bought a place in Huatulco. And I said, where's that? And she said, it's in Oaxaca. And I said, honey, it sounds like you got a cold. What's going on? It was quite the interesting day. And actually, that's where I first sort of engaged international living, because as somebody who all of a sudden now had to figure out how, you know, how do you buy property? Right. How do you do all this stuff? I started looking around on the internet and very quickly found international living in the high end of the search terms, and bought a few books and a few audios at the time, and then eventually went to some conferences and wound up as a roundtable member.
That's right. Your relationship with international living has been long and deep, and I want to also mention that you now speak at our conferences with a method that kind of dovetails with your technical and communications background, a method that lets people earn a living anywhere they are in the world in surprising ways, ways that they can leverage what they do, even if it's something that isn't necessarily technical or has anything to do with the internet. Can you explain a little bit about that, what the method is?
Yes. It's actually a process of figuring out how to work online. And what's happened with all the layoffs in the United States and the job situation, a lot of the staff positions have been eliminated. So when the boss used to write a report and then turn around and hand it to Sally to proofread it, Sally would proofread it and then give it back to him. Well, now Sally's no longer there. She's been laid off. And these jobs have gone on to the internet. It's almost, for people that understand what eBay is all about, where people, you know, sell stuff out of their garage. Right. And the same thing has happened for all these little work assignments. And it's everything from proofread my report, prepare a document. So there's all kinds of what I call micro jobs, you know, the little assignments that you can do. And so that's the opportunity for everybody. And all of us baby boomers that have had a career one way or another have, you know, spent a fair amount of time proofreading a document, preparing a PowerPoint presentation.
Sure.
Talking to, you know, just giving somebody some advice about something specific to an industry or a specific type of work. And all those skills can be turned in, for the most part, to something that you can do online. Now, it's not completely simple to do that. You know, you have to understand there's over 200 job networks out there that offer these kinds of opportunities. And the largest one is paid out over $350 million. So this is really big business. It's not, you know, two guys sitting in a room with a bare light bulb, you know, swapping jobs. It's not this is a very big, very sophisticated business. I've been a member on the largest network called Elance, I think, now for 11 years. So it's very
It sounds like, though, without knowing exactly what you're doing, you could wade into this and spend a lot of time trying to hack and slash your way through it before you actually figured it out.
That's an excellent point. You know, somebody can be sitting at night and they type in make money online into a search engine or some, you know, phrase like that, and they'll find a whole bunch of sites that they can register for, and then they kind of go on the site and they look around and they figure out what's going on. And at the end of the day, what most people don't realize is that your ability to earn an income online has to do with your ability to market yourself. And this is clearly and distinctly different than selling yourself. I know a lot of people that I work with say, I don't like to sell. I'm not, you know, I'm not a salesperson. Don't put me in that position. And the good news is that marketing as it's done online is completely different from selling. But there are certain things that you want to do when you sign up for one of these job boards. For example, most people don't know that having your picture and a good picture on there is extremely important, because people want to connect with you as a person. And when they're looking at a list of, you know, 10 people that have bid on a project and half of them have pictures and half of them don't, I've talked to buyers on those networks who say the ones that don't have a picture, if I can't kind of look them in the eye that way, I'm right. not even going to consider them for the project. And somebody might go on there and say, well, I put in my profile, I put in my resume, I did everything I was supposed to do, and, you know, I'm not getting any bids. And I said, have you put in a picture yet? You know, and they say, well, no, I mean, I that doesn't make much difference, does it? Well, in some cases, it can make all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
So in our course, we teach over 150 little items like that that help make what you do to work on those networks better than what most people do in the networks. And frankly, I'm sure that 80 to 90% of the people that go on those networks, in my opinion, are just coming to it and signing up and trying to see what happens.
Right.
But the way I developed this course is, number one, based on my own experience. But number two, I stepped outside of that and interviewed a number of different people on Elance that are providers on there to get different perspectives of how, you know, how do you make your profile effective? How do you bid jobs effectively? What things do you say to buyers in order to have them select you and rather as opposed to select somebody else? How do you present a profile online? There's a lot of little different things that you can do, and that's basically what we've accumulated and put into our 21-lesson course.
And it's stuff that you wouldn't think about necessarily yourself, because this is, as you said, a huge burgeoning field out there, and there's a lot involved with it. But the great news is that you can do this from wherever you have an internet connection, and in your case, that means Huatulco, Mexico. We talked about the nice weather there. We talked about the small town feel. Is this a place that you think you're going to stay for a long time, or is there another destination in your future?
Since I got turned on to living internationally, I haven't met a place I didn't like.
And That's a danger, Whitten. Yeah.
Right. I know that you have a little bit of that too. And so I spent a lot of time in San Miguel this last year. I hope to spend a lot of time there this year. Yeah. I've got travel to about 5 countries planned over the next 12 months and that I know of, and then some other sort of opportunities that are in the works. So, but for now, Huatulco is home base. You know, I think it's good to have a home base. The neat thing is, you know, about traveling all over Latin and South America for the most part, and even in Europe and that sort of thing, if you know where to look, you can find very reasonable places to live. I saw yeah. one of Steenie's presentations at the last conference in Ecuador, and that area of Italy that she was talking about was fabulous, and she talked about some great bargains, you know, go there and rent for the summer or something like that. That looked like a pretty good idea, and of course, because pretty much everything I do is online, I could go there and for the most part not miss a beat in terms of being on top of my business and the people that I'm working with and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Steenie Harvey is in Italy right now, in fact.
Oh, really?
For yeah. International Living. So we'll be hearing more from her. I want to ask you, Whitten, and I usually end up asking experienced expats this that I talk to on the program. What is your single biggest piece of advice for anybody who's contemplating making this move, either from the United States or Canada or from the UK, and just taking their show on the road?
Well, I would give yourself permission to be confused, because there will be many confusions, but just know that if you take it one step at a time, you can find your way through it.
Whitten, thank you so much. I appreciate talking to you today. I'm glad you had the time to do this. And I join with you in celebrating this new era of technology that allows us to do this on Skype, computer to computer. It's a great new world now, isn't it?
It sure is. I remember going to the World's Fair in 1964, and they had the video telephone there, and it was pretty expensive. And I always felt kind of gypped for the last 40 years because you know, the Bell telephone company never quite got that thing into my home. And here we've all got it on Skype. So it's a wonderful world.
Great. Whitten, thank you. Talk to you soon.
All right, okay? Dan. Thanks. Good talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Sign up for International Living's free daily postcards at internationalliving.com/radio and get a free report on the world's top retirement havens. These free daily postcards will give you more information on living the good life for less overseas. Thanks for listening to International Living Radio. You can hear more episodes of Finding Your Overseas Paradise at internationalliving.com/radio.